You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Good evening, Europe! Let the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest begin!
Our 12 points...
12 points!
12 points go to...
Italy!
Italy!
12 punti, zitti e buoni, Italia, Italy!
Italy, 12 points in Italy, 12 points!
Hello and welcome to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast. This is the first episode. My name's Steve Holden and I'm so excited to be here. I'm a music reporter and presenter and I'm a huge Eurovision fan who's been covering this wonderful contest for years. You don't need me to tell you that we are just a few weeks away now from the Eurovision semi-finals and that grand final in Turin. Who is going to follow in Måneskin's footsteps and lift that Eurovision trophy? It's the world's largest live music event, watched by up to 200 million people around the world, and 40 countries are competing this year. We welcome back Armenia and Montenegro after a few years away. And I'm guessing many of you probably have a favourite already. I know some of you do wait until you see how the act and the song works on stage. But whether you are a diehard fan who watches every national final or someone who is brand new to the Eurovision family, hopefully there is something in this podcast for you. Here's what's coming up. Eurovision legends Kano look back at their amazing night in Tel Aviv.
I kept on crying. I cried when I got changed. I cried on the dance floor. I was just so happy. It's always happy tears.
We've got the boss of the Eurovision Song Contest on, Martin Osterdahl.
We're changing focus slightly in our strategy from running a contest to managing a brand. And that brand, I believe, will be a global entertainment super brand.
And we're going to be taking a trip to Iceland too.
Even, you know, those who are like, oh my God, this is like so lame, I never watch this. They're at home and they're watching. Everybody is. It is the biggest TV event every year in Iceland.
If you want the latest episode of the Eurovision Song Contest podcast as soon as it drops, then subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Right then, our very first guests are a trio from Norway who've become a huge part of the Eurovision family. Kano are Tom, Alexandra and Fred. They came together in 2018 as a band when they realised the power of three was better than one. They won Melody Grand Prix, which is Norway's national selection show, the following year, and they went to the 2019 contest in Tel Aviv with their song Spirit in the Sky. Now, after the jury votes had been revealed that night, they were actually in 18th place out of 26 countries. But when the public vote was revealed, they got a huge 291 points. They ended up in 6th place overall. Since then, they've tried to get into Eurovision again, and they have travelled the world. So a big hello to Fred, Alex and Tom from Kano.
Hey! How are you? Good to see you.
We're good, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the pod. You've just come back from Australia, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We just landed about a week ago, I think.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun and a lot of unexpected things that happened as well.
What kind of unexpected things?
Well, first of all, it was the flooding. Because we were in Brisbane when the extreme weather hit, so we had to cancel our show there, unfortunately. And as some of you may know, we collaborated with Te Hau Tahiti, the haka band, back in 2019. And they were actually going to come to our concert, but they couldn't because of the flooding. So we had to cancel, and we were so sad about it.
And also, like Alexandra, she was hospitalized.
Really? What happened?
Well, there, you know, there's a lot of dangerous animals in Australia.
Yeah, I kind of always had a dream about holding a koala. So I got to do that when we were visiting a zoo one day. And the koala scratched me on my back. And all of a sudden, I got these blisters and it hurt like hell. And I didn't know what to do. So I was rushed into the emergency room and they took me there and gave me like intravenous antibiotics. It was pretty serious.
All from a koala scratch.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you okay now? You're perfectly fine now, right?
It's getting going like up and down. So the doctors in Norway are now trying to figure out what this could be, because nobody has ever seen this type of blister spreading around my body. So I'm like infectious woman walking around here right now.
Well, it was kind of scary.
Yeah, and you were there as well when I got back home after the concert. Yeah. And I was like, hey, Fred, I have like 40 degrees in fever. I have to go to
the
hospital.
And you were shaking as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, just standing there and shaking.
Yeah. Oh. Let's talk about the positives, though, because you did get to perform and you got to hang out at Mardi Gras as well. Was it like everything you dreamed of?
It was really a dream come true performing during Eurovision Australia Decides.
And of course, being there in Mardi Gras and seeing the parade, wow, I actually cried a lot because it was so beautiful to see so many different people in one place just being happy, loving each other and celebrating. And it was just amazing.
And suddenly we just saw a guy with a Kano t-shirt in the parade as well.
Amazing. See, the Kano love spreads across the world. And just checking, Alex, are you still in love with koalas despite what happened?
I don't know, maybe from a distance they're kind of cute, but I don't think I'll hold one ever again.
But you're back in Norway now. Are you guys in your recording studio at the moment? Where are you?
Yes
we are. We're actually doing some final touches on a new song.
I think no one would argue that you as a band, since you appeared at Eurovision, you've not stayed quiet. You've constantly worked. Your work ethic is really, really high. As you said, you're always putting out new music.
I think it's really important that you never see this as work. It is something we do because we love it from the bottom of our hearts. And then it's so natural for us to just keep on going with that flow, having fun together, writing music while we travel. I mean, I think we've like written maybe 2 songs in this room because we always write when we're around. And that kind of gives that extra spice to our music and to our lifestyle. And yeah, I mean, we love this and we would never do anything else.
We started on small scale concerts before we suddenly were on the big stage, which we didn't have any experience from. Yeah. But so in a way, like it's natural for us to keep on doing music. That's why we're here in a way. Yeah.
Three years, 2019. Does it feel like yesterday?
Yeah, the first time we met, we were actually in 2018. Mm. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, many years. Mm. God.
I mean, just thinking about it kind of takes me back to that moment, being on that stage and being part of that adventure, seeing something that is so out of the ordinary, but it's still like a huge community. People doesn't talk about how beautiful it is and how much fun it is, and so many people throughout the world. Like, it's so cool.
It's strange to see pictures of us like 3 years ago. We look so innocent and
I look so innocent. Like, I feel like I've grown like 10 years on those past 4 years.
So 3 years with Fred and me, that like equals 10 years.
Oh my God, I'm going to get so old so young.
I mean, you don't need to be told about that night and how well you did. But one of the moments I really want to talk to you about in detail is a fan favourite. It's one of the fan favourite moments of that night. And it was when you were receiving the points. When they announced your score, you got the highest public vote. You won it. And Alex, especially, your reaction was just amazing. Floods of tears.
It was like kind of seeing that all the hard work that we put through in order to travel and meet people and tell people about Kano and Spirit in the Sky, it had done something good. And to get that, like, confirmation sitting there after receiving the jury points, it was just, like, so many good feelings. It meant that we had an audience out there, that the Kano family had grown, and that we were ready to, like, do something after Eurovision. It was amazing, and I immediately started crying. I was a bit drunk, too, as well, so, yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah, but yeah, because it is, like I think up through, like, we've all struggled with, in a way, being accepted both like personally but also like musically for many years. And then it's like when we felt that we had something special with Kano, that when we came together and started working together, things really started falling into place. And then we felt we did quite well. So like when the jurors didn't get what we were trying to do, it was like, okay, well, that's it then. And then We were invited actually down for an interview with a radio channel, and they gave us a couple of shots of vodka. And then suddenly they said, but you know that you're trending really, really well now on social media. I was like, what? Well, I didn't. And suddenly, so yeah, you might get a surprise. For us, we thought, okay, this was it. And it was fun.
We were happy with how we did. Yeah, we were really happy at that time. But
yeah, that was definitely one of my happiest moments, seeing that all our work actually had meant something for people. And that's the most important thing. But the juries are four people in each country, and which, of course, have their opinion. But the most important thing is the opinion of the people. Yeah.
Alex, did you stop crying that night?
No, I kept on crying. I cried when I got changed. I cried on the dance floor. I was just so happy. It's always happy tears.
Okay, so out of the three of you, who has watched back Spirit in the Sky from the grand final more than the others, would you say?
I actually think you, Fred.
Yeah.
Because you're a lot on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm always, every day, and it always pops up. So I have to look at it and just remind myself how that was. Because the energy in the audience was so warm, and we felt so welcoming on stage.
I'm not watching it that many times because of my vocals in the end, where I'm like, and it's like, no, stop it.
Yeah, of all the run-throughs, that was like, for me, the worst vocally ever. However, the energy, when I look back at it, like, even though, okay, we're a bit off pitch some places, and that's usually not our problem. There's other things, like, for instance, like remembering lyrics. That's my biggest problem. However, the energy that we see and we feel, like, we know, like, yeah, it's something to be proud of.
Yeah, and you could hear the audience on the video as well.
On the yoik, the clapping, remember?
Yeah, offbeat clapping.
The offbeat clapping, I know, it always annoys me. Well, it doesn't annoy me. It's just like, oh, I wish it was in time. But it doesn't, it just adds to the whole video, really, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? It just adds to the moment, which was really special, obviously, for you guys. What doors did Eurovision open for you three?
Every door for the rest of our career since then. I mean, a thing that luckily we have Tom, who already had this, like, kind of figured out that we should have a plan directly after. And we got along and we were like, okay, we want to do this, we want to do that. We don't want to wait for something to happen. We need to work for it to happen. So I'm really glad that we did that because that, again, opened many doors after. So we didn't relax after Eurovision. We packed our suitcases and traveled Europe, and that was amazing too.
I think a lot of artists actually, or managements or labels, maybe they don't see the potential of what Eurovision can be for a career in the future. There's a lot of potential still that artists can get from Eurovision.
I want to touch on 2021 just briefly, because you guys entered Melody Grand Prix with Monument, and unfortunately you didn't get through to the main Eurovision final or the semi-finals. Fred, let me ask you, were you guys disappointed that you didn't make it through, or did you just enjoy that experience?
We did enjoy that experience, but I have to admit that we were kind of, we really wanted to win, and we really believed in the song, A Monument, because we had been working so hard with the song and with the music video as well. So we felt that this song, yeah, it should be in the Eurovision.
Yeah, we love Eurovision with our entire hearts, and to kind of like have that dream that we built up again, like we want to go again, we love Eurovision, we want to be on that stage, and to get that, like, pardon my words, crushed, it broke my heart. And but luckily we're three, so when you're down, we can easily build each other up again and see new opportunities. So we were quickly to like, okay, let's just do a week now where we just relax and just, okay, get this out of our heads. And then we start seeing new possibilities or opportunities. So, but we love Eurovision. And of course, it was sad that we didn't go through.
Yeah, and we felt like this was even more Kano because we knew each other much more.
In any case, it was definitely a wise decision, because we managed to kind of like have another hit, and then and because of Melody Grand Prix, so we're happy with that.
Two things: Monument ended up being in my like top 10 most streamed songs of last year, and it also, the video persuaded me that I need to go to Norway, like do a rural trip. Do you know what I mean? Like up the coast to the north. You really sold your country really well in that video.
We were, yeah. Yeah, that
and
was...
still showing where we're all from, yeah. Like our where our heritage is from. Mm. So that's kind of what we wanted to yeah. get through the video.
Dare I ask, would you try and go for Eurovision again?
Well, we tried twice and I think we've proven that you should never try again after... No, but I like we'd definitely
you never say never.
Never say yeah. never, but we definitely don't have any plans about that.
You know, we were like when we lost in Norway, San Marino hadn't chosen their representative yet. So Tom called me and he was like, "Hey guys, should we go for San Marino this year?"
That was a joke, though.
Yeah, it was a joke. But anyways, it was fun. Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't have topped Flo Rida, to be honest, could you? I don't think anybody could have last year.
No, we couldn't. I mean, even though, like, we got the Fred Rider here.
Fred Rider,
love it. This year, Norway are being represented by two yellow wolves, Subwoofer. Do you have any idea who they are?
Let's just say that we know.
We know.
We definitely know.
Have you had to sign an NDA or a non-disclosure agreement, or have you been sworn to secrecy?
The only thing that we can say that they're like they're really good. Yeah. They're really and like so
good colleagues.
Yeah, really good colleagues, and I think that Norway have has chosen a very good representative this year, and they're definitely gonna do a lot of people proud, and I think they're gonna nail it on stage. So yeah, I think we're gonna be proud.
Can I ask all three of you separately, what was your kind of defining memory from Tel Aviv? Alex, I'll start with you. What was like the moment that is clearest in your mind?
Walking out on stage while our kind of video presenting us was on TV, when we walked out on stage and people were like, "Go Norway!" right before we started singing. That gave me goosebumps and I was like, "No, don't make me cry."
No, you don't want to cry before you start singing, do you? Like, no. Fred, how about you?
For me, it was when I heard the audience yoik so loud that I even couldn't hear the backing track in my ears. And I just saw those happy faces yoiking along. And just 1 year before, I was just sitting in my sofa in Norway and watching Eurovision. And couldn't imagine that a yoik could be so big in Europe. So that was my moment.
And Tom, your defining moment of Tel Aviv.
I remember like in this, the part after the yoik in Spirit in the Sky, when we all are joined together on stage and there's this big fire going off and like, the heat from that. And just like felt, okay, actually the energy that we got together, right? Like, okay, now I'm in the zone or feeling flow, as you can say, like because right now, this is where I want to be. From that on, it was like, okay, we've made it. Like, this was amazing.
Yeah. Finally, what is next for Kano? What have you got planned?
We are going to release quite a lot of songs this year. We're also working on an online portal that will be a place where our fans can meet outside of or in the digital sphere.
I think what you've just told me is there is still plans for world domination, you know, step by step by step by step. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
So
thank
nice so talking to you. Us. Yeah, thank you.
thanks to Kano. I had the pleasure of seeing them last week at the London Eurovision party where they went down an absolute treat. I loved hearing them talk about that night in Tel Aviv, plus Alex saying that Eurovision has opened every door for them. And as for Subwoofer, no, they did not tell me who they are when we stopped recording. I saw Subwoofer at the London party too, but never without their masks. So the mystery goes on. If you're following Eurovision on socials, you might have seen some pictures of the staging coming together at the Palo Olimpico Stadium in Turin, in Italy. The Sound of Beauty is this year's tagline too. And to find out how things are going, we have gone straight to the top because Martin Osterdahl is the executive supervisor, the big boss of the Eurovision Song Contest. It's the second year he's been in charge. He is Swedish and he previously organised the contests in Malmö in 2013 and then again in Stockholm in 2016. So he has good Eurovision heritage. Martin Osterdahl, welcome. How are you feeling?
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, and now I'm feeling really well at the moment. I'm very excited to head over to Turin.
Yeah, what is your excitement level on a level of 1 to 12 points at the moment?
No, I'd say I'm getting close to my 12 points. As we've seen over the last couple of years, I think the general level and diversity of songs and artistic expression is just incredible, and I think this year will be a good one. I've been part of the Eurovision for a long time. I've been to every song contest since Helsinki. The level has increased a lot. I think it's difficult to compare, really, the contest today from what it used to be 15 years ago. And we're seeing it breaking new ground still with new age groups and not least in the younger age groups where we didn't see that kind of growth previously. So it's I think a lot of countries and broadcasters are taking the song contest more seriously, working with it more professionally, and we can see the results.
Before we talk about the upcoming contest, let's just go back to your first one as executive supervisor last year in Rotterdam. With all the challenges that were there with COVID, you got the job done.
Being there in the arena when we finally were able to bring back the contest, and not only the contest, we were the first really big international event that came back. And also with an audience, we didn't know until only a few weeks before it actually happened whether we would be able to have an audience or not. But when we were there, when I was sitting there at the scrutineer's desk, when we were sort of counting down and warming up the audience, feeling that energy, it was, I get goosebumps just thinking back on it now. It was such an emotional release, I think, to everyone.
And Måneskin's win, what did you make of that?
We saw in the build-up that that Italy had a really strong act. And also the way they came out on stage and developed, I'd say, through the rehearsals, it became evident that this was a strong favourite, a kind of breakout success that we see every now and then in the Eurovision Song Contest, but certainly not every year.
Italy, Turin this year. How are the preparations going in the Italian city? How's it all looking? I know we've seen a couple of pictures of the staging going up, but how's it going?
It's going very well. It's we're now in a build-up phase. Technically, probably the most complex live television show in the world. It's a real challenge for any member organization of the EBU to host the song contest, and it has been a challenge for the Italians as well, but they've risen to it, and what we're seeing now being put together in Palo Olimpico is an absolutely extraordinary stage.
What is your grand plan? What's your vision for Eurovision going forward?
What fascinated me most with the Eurovision Song Contest was the enormous potential that I think it has. It can reach a lot more people. With the strong value base that it has, I also think it can have a bigger impact on the world that it has. And we've seen over the last few years, just as we said, that it has become more professional, more better, if you like, in quality. That is something that we can continue to work with. We can also continue with working with the development of the show itself. And I think there are still things that we can tweak and make this show even more more effective and better as a show. But then, of course, what's really taken off in the last year or so is the digital side, and how the Eurovision Song Contest with its content is just perfectly apt for the modern media landscape in terms of shareability. We're changing focus slightly in our strategy from running a contest to managing a brand. And that brand, I believe, will be a global entertainment super brand.
Lots of focus on Ukraine with what's happening there. Kalush Orchestra at the moment planning to still be on the stage in May in Turin. What are you doing, or what are the EBU doing, to make sure that that band gets to perform at Eurovision?
What we do is that we help and support our members, and especially in times of crisis. So the EBU are supporting UAPBC, as they are called in the Ukraine, in different ways, and of course we want to help them as much as we can for them to come to the song contest.
Looking back over Eurovision's past, what's one of your kind of favorite personal Eurovision memories, not necessarily as working for it, but just as being a fan or a spectator? What moments have stuck out?
That's how much time do I have? No, but I mean I was brought up in a in a music industry family in Sweden. My dad actually competed in the Eurovision Song Contest and he won Sweden's national selection Melodifestivalen in 1967 as a songwriter and performed or went to the song contest in 67 in Vienna. And this was long before I was born, as I'm sure you realize. But it's been, you know, it's been with the family since I was born. My mother also worked her entire career in the music industry in Sweden. But you know, of course, for me, it was amazing to be in Baku when Loreen won with Euphoria. I'm jumping between different memories here. Of course, when Justin Timberlake came on stage in 2016, I also felt that something had happened. Everything around that, to bring a superstar in like that, who actually really felt like a contribution and a good natural fit, it was all part of the story that we wanted to tell about Swedish pop music, from ABBA to Avicii.
We can't not mention Love, Love, Peace, Peace, can we?
You never quite know what's going to become legend. But I'll never forget when I was standing next to Edward, who was the director or the creator of that act. We stood next to each other on the first dress rehearsal, the first on-stage rehearsal of that act. We just looked at each other and it's a car crash. that was our reaction the first time we saw it. We thought, nobody's going to like this. You know, it's a complete mess. But, it ended up being pretty okay in the end.
Pretty okay. Became iconic, Martin. Absolutely iconic. Totally. You said earlier that, you know, there are so many challenges and you learn something new every year. What have you learned this year?
I've learned a lot from working with the Italians. I had the pleasure of going to San Remo. It just completely blew me away how warm that show is, how relaxed it is, how much room they leave for improvisation, for, you know, live music. There were a lot of great things there that were very different, let's put it that way, from Melodifestivalen, which is the Swedish equivalent. So I've learned a lot from the Italians, from their way of doing things. We've also learned a lot through the last 2 years, I would say, when it comes to handling crisis, and especially with the pandemic, of course, and the importance of dialogue, communication. And we've had to agree on a lot of difficult things like, you know, reducing delegation sizes, reducing ticket allocations, reducing press center accreditations, things that nobody really wants to do, but just we had to do in order to make this thing work again. I mean, I think it's only a couple of days ago since Italy actually left the state of emergency that they've been in for 2 years. For the host broadcaster, it's very difficult to plan. Restrictions have been lifted in many countries around us, but they hadn't been lifted in Italy yet. So it's been really difficult for Rai to say that we can welcome everyone, that we can sell all the tickets we want to sell. We've been hoping and we've been thinking that we would, but we haven't been able to know for sure. Even if all the restrictions are lifted around us, we're a super event with thousands of people involved, and we cannot still let go of all the restrictions because we have to safeguard the production. We have to make sure that the people who are working there are well, and we have to make sure that all the artists that have worked so hard for this, they get to stand on that stage. You know, God forbid, we don't want anyone having to isolate in a hotel room again in the production and behind the scenes. It will still be a health and safety protocol.
On a lighter note, some people will know that you turn your hand to a bit of writing, don't you? Spy thrillers, novels. Any chance that there is anything Eurovision related in the works when it comes to your fiction?
Yeah, quite possibly, but that will probably we'll have to wait until someone else takes over.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
So Martin mentioned his dad there. His father Marcus wrote Sweden's 1967 entry. It came eighth, which isn't too bad. Now, each episode, we're going to check in across Europe with a different podcaster, radio host or fan to see how things are going. And today we are off to a country that has never won Eurovision yet, Iceland. Julia Margaret Einarsdóttir is a podcast host, writer and journalist who works for RÚV, that is the Icelandic national broadcaster. Julia, we have to start with just how much everyone in Iceland loves Eurovision, because it's a country where it's thought 99.9% of the population watch the grand final.
Yeah, there's always like this one person that goes out and to take a drive around the city and just records everything, because there's not one car on the streets. It's crazy. And just like it's something that even, you know, those who are like, oh my God, this is like so lame, I never watch this, they're at home and they're watching. Everybody is. So it's like, it's kind of, you know, in a way, it is the biggest TV event every year in Iceland.
In recent years, Iceland has had a little bit of a Eurovision revolution, because you didn't qualify for the final for 4 years in a row until Hatari came onto the scene in 2019.
I kind of felt the buzz when Hatari was. And I'm also, because I'm working as a cultural journalist for RÚV, so with Hatari, you couldn't keep up because there was always something new. And they were always like doing something, you know, something super punky. And so it was a lot. And we felt like the European eyes were on us. So, yeah, I was pretty confident when they went. And then, of course, you know, it was kind of crazy with Dade as well. First of all, that, you know, because we've never won, like, you know. You know, we've come second 2 times and nobody forgets those moments. You know, when we finally felt like, you know, this is it. And we were just like thinking, you know, where are we going to have it? And how is it going to be? And then, you know, of course, the whole thing was shut down because of COVID. But we can still like tell us that we would have won that year.
2020, despite the contest being cancelled, it was a big year for Iceland in Eurovision, because not only were you the favourites to win, but you also had the Eurovision movie as well, you know? So the focus that year was on Iceland. It was a big moment. Have you visited the museum yet in Húsavík?
No, I haven't. I haven't been to Húsavík, I think, since. And I think it was so funny, like with the Yaya Ding Dong thing, you know, they also opened a bar named after the song. And Iceland is such a perfect place to do something like this, because, you know, we're so small and so weird. And we always get so excited when there's something Icelandic just mentioned somewhere. So this was a really big moment for the nation. And everybody saw the movie and yeah, everybody was like super proud about it. It's like, oh my God, they're actually talking about us, you know. So yeah, it was a big year. And then, you know, of course, next year with Dade going again, it was so typical that our contestants were the ones to get COVID and not being able to participate. But yeah, it was amazing to see them coming in fourth. And, you know, Dade, you know, and like his success, and also with Hatari, it has shown like musicians, at least, you know, here at home, how big of a platform this competition is, you know, that you can actually like become worldwide famous by going into the competition.
Do you still hold a lot of hope that it will happen, that you will see Iceland win Eurovision?
Honestly, we are a small nation, and it's gonna be challenging when it finally happens to actually find a place where we can, you know, host it and stuff. But yeah, I mean, we're still excited and we're still hopeful, even though it's been like so many years with, you know, nothing happening. I'm not sure it's going to be this year, but it's going to happen eventually. But either way, you know, just like watching and you know, just rooting for your favorite song. It doesn't have to be your own country. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, we're hopeful. It's going to happen one day, whenever it's going to be. But until then, we're still going to be happy. We're still going to compete. And yeah, we're still going to be watching, and there's nobody going to be in the streets, you know.
I was going to say, Julia, make it your mission to find that one person who goes out for a drive and get them to go in and watch it. So it's so you basically have 100% of Iceland watching Eurovision. It's possible.
Honestly, Honestly, it's crazy. Because I've, you know, I'm usually working. I'm just like in front of the computer while the event is happening, and we always get sent like this one video from this one person who goes out for that drive. And it's so funny, you know, everybody just locks themselves in. There's nothing going on in the streets. It's just like there's a cat running and there's a wind, but there's no one. It's just like after an apocalypse.
I would actually love to get that one person on the podcast. If you know them, the one person in Iceland who refuses to watch Eurovision, let me know. Let's get them on, because we really want you to be a part of this podcast too. The fans are one of the reasons why Eurovision is the huge spectacle it is now. So leave a comment with some of your favourite Eurovision memories, or who would you like me to talk to on this podcast? I mean, there's lots of contestants to choose from. But as I mentioned, we are well into Eurovision season. We've had the pre-parties in Barcelona, London and Tel Aviv. Amsterdam and Madrid is to come. We've got loads of guests lined up for you over the next few weeks. And next time, we're going to be meeting the class of Eurovision 2022.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.